This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.
Brandon Thurston from WrestleNomics is up next, and we're going to follow Brandon with John Pollock from Post Wrestling.
Delivering on the returns, increasing our margins.
Ratings go down the toilet if I'm not here.
All I do is simply put the math in my favor.
We agree that Brandon and John do good work.
The reason is simple wrestling economics.
Then told the Netflix numbers, I've been told the metrics a little bit, probably five different times, I still don't get it.
There were respectable wrestling journalists who needed answers.
Thank you very much, members of the media. I hope you all go to hell.
How about we pop a number right here, right now?
The whole part of the show, man.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Pollock and Thurston. I am John Pollock of Post Wrestling, joined by Mr. Public Documents, Brandon Thurston. He's coming for you. How are you, Brandon?
I'm fine. How are you?
Doing well. It is, it is the eve of Thanksgiving for you.
It is, yes. I was thinking about this. You've already had Thanksgiving again a month earlier.
Yeah, we do this in October every year. We get it out of the way.
And everybody gets the day off on that day.
We get the Monday off, correct. Yeah, it's a Monday holiday for us in Canada.
Well, it's a Thursday holiday here.
All right. Is it a big, is Buffalo just shutting down for the day?
Probably. Well, there's supposed to be a huge snowstorm that's coming in Thursday night. The signs outside are saying adjust your travel plans because the rumors have started. The snow is on its way.
Okay. Well, that means we'll probably get hit as well. So there's your weather update for, Western New York and probably into Southern Ontario as well. Stay inside. Don't celebrate Thanksgiving. Or if you do so, don't involve a car. Those are the lessons you learn by tuning into this show for your weather update. But we have more updates.
You should have learned that from a Survivor Series. Was it 2000 where Paul Levesque was dropped in a car?
Yes. He too was advised Thanksgiving week, don't get into a car because you might be forklifted to death. And
well, he survived. He
took 3 weeks off TV and then, you know what, came back better than ever. There's something to be said for just sucking it up and being able to overcome a horrific vehicular manslaughter cause. Well, we have a lot to get into on today's show, not the least of which is our favorite topic. The topic of the year is Big Data Plus Panel. Vince McMahon got his phone returned from the feds.
He did.
I mean, that was
two and a half years. They kept it from him.
That's a long time to have your phone taken away by the federal authorities, and then Vince McMahon got it back.
The authorities definitely took it from him.
Yeah, things of that nature.
Yes.
And we'll also be discussing AJ Lee and Stephanie McMahon talking about equal pay for women. And Stephanie McMahon, proud of what AJ did 10 years ago when she put Stephanie on blast on Twitter. All of that to be discussed. But Brandon, you were busy this past week because it was the end of September that the new era began in professional wrestling. Big Data Plus Panel. And that has led to a surge in viewership across all sports entities, but unfortunately, the one outlet that has not benefited so well from this has been our industry of professional wrestling. And Brandon was able to get the comparison points over these last 2 months, and comparing the panel data with the panel plus big data. It's a lot of data that we are parsing here, but thankfully it is in graph form for everyone to look at, and we can compare in both overall viewership, 18 to 49 and 25 to 54. What are the differences for the main wrestling programming that is still on broadcast and cable? We have SmackDown viewership. We have AEW Dynamite and Collision. And you also were able to look at some NXT comparisons as well, which, paint a similar picture. But why don't you just go over some of this reporting, Brandon, and some of your findings before we get to your responses that you got from at least one particular network.
Sure. We got some promos coming up. And to be really clear, I feel like it's really hard to know how to word this to be as clear as possible. Because like the week before I published this article, I did an article just looking at the data, what it's been like since late September. Here's the last, I believe it was 7 weeks before the big data, before the methodology became the primary methodology on September 23rd, roughly. I did a thing where I said, let's look at the 7 weeks before and the 7 weeks after. That's not what this is.
No.
This is only the 7 weeks or so after, from like September 23rd to November 10th. It's the same episodes, the same methodology. So you can't say, well, that maybe the ratings just went down and they're making that's not what this is.
You were able to get the panel data, which up until this point, we did not have that data to compare. Like, what would these exact same shows have done under the old system?
Right. And what we see is interesting in a number of ways. So what we see, for example, is that, SmackDown is down consistently. Dynamite is down fairly consistently. It's interesting that actually the Tuesday preemption, Title Tuesday, where they went head-to-head with NXT, big data actually measured slightly higher than the old panel-only methodology. And Collision is maybe in some ways most interesting of all. Now, we have most cases, the old methodology does measure higher, but we've got this one data point up here on, what was it, October, 15th, I think it was, where they aired right after Dynamite, where big data measured substantially higher on this scale than the old methodology, where they, under big data, they measured 400,000 viewers versus roughly 350,000 viewers. Should we get into all this now? I think it's really interesting, because remember how long that episode was that aired right after Dynamite that night?
An hour.
It was 67 minutes long. How long are all these other episodes on this chart?
2 hours.
2 hours. And this is the lone episode where big data measured it considerably higher than all the other episodes. Shorter duration. Now, that does align with a theory that the reason why these episodes of wrestling programs, the reason why wrestling programs might be hurting here is because they're not categorized as sports, whereas we've seen sports generally, if anything, they're doing better on a general basis, because the theory is that there's some exception in this methodology. Nobody's confirming this. Nobody will talk about this. There's some application in this methodology that says, look, if you're watching a show for over an hour or something like that, we're going to assume that you're a passive viewer and we're going to discount your viewership somehow. But if you're watching sports, well, people watch sports for a long time, so we're not going to apply that onto sports. But of course, fake wrestling is not sports, so we're not putting them in that bucket, even though all of their programs are 2 hours long. So that's what we're seeing here in this Collision example is consistent with that. And another thing that I was thinking, too, is it's unfortunate that Raw has moved to Netflix. So I'd be very curious to know, if we still lived in a world where Raw was on traditional TV, TV ratings enthusiasts everywhere will all remember well, how was Raw reported in the Nielsen ratings? Is there something unusual about how Raw was reported? Do you remember? WWE Entertainment?
It was broken up into separate programs per hour.
Yeah. Each hour, it was reported as if it was three different programs that aired consecutively. I wonder.
Which was never the case for SmackDown. It was just this.
Correct.
This goes back to the Monday Night Wars, where they separated Raw with the second hour being Warzone, and then you would get two slots in the cable rankings as opposed to one combined two-hour block.
So I think the terminology is it was coded in that way. It was coded into Nielsen in that way. So 1 hour, one slot. I bet what would really prove this case out is if it was still on, say, USA Network and it had a slot for each hour, we might be seeing, if I'd done this report in a world where Raw was still on cable and being reported one slot for each hour, that Raw might not be hurting at all. And we might be seeing that, you know, Raw's ratings after the new methodology seem to be doing just fine. I bet that would be the case. You know, if this
your theory being that because they are 1 hour slots that they
right.
wouldn't
they're
be
only 60 minutes
like
yeah.
we're seeing here. Yeah. What would be comparisons that we could look at that are programs that are in excess of an hour that are non-sports? Like, would we be looking, like, I'm thinking of something like Survivor, that's like a 90 minutes. That would be something that comes to mind. Like, there's obviously not a lot of those examples of non-sports that are in excess of 60 minutes in duration that we can look at.
Right. There's very few, and I did not prepare my spreadsheets to address that question, but that's something we could look into with Programming Insider data alone. So all of that is apps. So what are the percentage differences? How much, you know, what's the percentage difference between the two methodologies for each of these programs? It's especially bad in the demo. In total viewership, it's down 6% for Collision, down 9% for Dynamite, down 14% for SmackDown. We don't have the individual data points for NXT, but I was told that it's down 9% for NXT. That's not great, but it's even worse in the ad demos, which is more important for these shows because most of these shows, with the exception of probably SmackDown, maybe even NXT too. Anyway, let's not get ahead of ourselves. It's down worse in the demos, which is where the ads are sold. It's what the ads are sold against. And we're seeing Collision actually only down 2%. Oh, but Dynamite down 20%. SmackDown down 20%. This is 18 to 49. And NXT down 27%. And it's pretty similar in 25 to 54.
These are insane differences.
A quarter of your ad demo viewership is just, well, for NXT has just gone away. 20% for Dynamite and SmackDown. So this is the currency that ads are being bought against, right? Like I'm buying X number of impressions and, you know, we put my ad on TV against those impressions. And when my impressions are all used up, well, the ad buy that I made is all used up. So it's a problem for these programs and that they're not satisfying ad buys as quickly, right? So that's what's happening there.
So in theory, I mean, AEW has, at least if they want to look at this, like they have, like Tony Khan is able to position whatever drops as, you know, being, you know, this new methodology combined with the fact that we have, as always, the unknown of whatever streaming audience exists for Dynamite and Collision, SmackDown and NXT, we don't have that like hidden audience that exists somewhere that might still be watching the show. And these are very dramatic losses that we are looking at as a result of this. And CW, which Brandon reached out to, did respond, and boy, did they. They were quoted in Brandon's story, quote, "We've expressed to Nielsen our deep frustration with the way it handled the process, communication, and methodology behind its big data rollout. The sudden and substantial discrepancy in WWE NXT viewership reported by big data relative to long-established viewing patterns is inexplicable and lacks credibility. Further, a comparison with data from all other measurement products, including others from Nielsen itself, exposes a fundamentally flawed methodology in big data. We are disappointed by Nielsen's lack of cooperation, transparency, and accountability with its network partners as we work to resolve this issue."
Yeah.
It is very rare you get such a strongly worded statement when you reach out to somebody for feedback for a story that you are working on, but CW yes. came out with a kind of all guns firing on this response.
Yes, I believe I shouted "Whoa!" across the room when I read this. By the way, what is big data? What is the change that we're actually dealing with here? We're going from, and it is described somewhere in this article, we're going from the panel, which I think everybody is more familiar with, right? The panel, the sample of homes. Ah, it's only these 42,000 homes around the country that are determining these all-important Nielsen ratings. Well, what Nielsen is trying to do here is say, well, we're going to expand this sample tremendously, and we're going to include not only, they will include the panel too in this methodology somehow, but they will also include 45 million households via set-top boxes, which is like your cable box, I guess, and your smart TV. So somehow those devices are transmitting data to Nielsen. 45 million households. There's about 120, 130 million households in the U.S. So that's like a third of all U.S. households. That's a great sample, right? But somehow this is not going well for wrestling. You'd think a huge sample would make for more accurate data, but we've got discrepancies. So it's hard to know what truly is the more accurate measurement. But if the theory is true, that if there's truth to the theory that, well, it's just a matter of counting this long duration viewership as passive rather than counting more accurately, that would be the issue there. So that's what the difference is. But somehow this is not going well for pro wrestling. And yeah,
I'll just add that CW is in a unique position to come out so strongly against this new methodology, because so many of these other networks, like, the net result has been substantial gains across so much of their programming, including live sports, that to criticize this new methodology for the sake of professional wrestling, it negates a greater advantage for a lot of these other networks. CW is not attached to any big NFL programming or Major League Baseball, and NXT is considered one of its, like, crown jewels of its programming schedule, that it's going to take much more issue, and it's going to feel the hit that NXT is taking far more than a lot of other networks, for instance, that, like, let's be honest, this pro wrestling story has remained a pro wrestling story. This has not become a larger issue among, you know, television pundits or people analyzing this big data and panel. Like, this is kind of a, you know, this has really been limited to your reporting, Brandon.
Yeah, so I guess I think about where these programs rank on the networks that they're on, and Dynamite and Collision. Dynamite is, especially when we're talking about things that air regularly, Dynamite's pretty high up there. It's actually now, as I reported a couple weeks ago, it's actually now performing below a lot of the primetime re-airings of reruns of Big Bang Theory, which I would think would be really concerning if you're AEW. But anyway, what I wanted to show here was NXT is by far CW's number one show. They might have some one-off specials. I know they have a little bit of college football, but when it comes to primetime programming, it's by far the number one show on CW. It is still the number one show on CW, but the gap is not as wide, not nearly. It is more competitive with the upper end of other CW programs. SmackDown would be a similar story. SmackDown blowing away just about everything else. It's definitely blowing away everything else on USA. But I guess as you point out there, though, NBC Universal, Versant, have a lot of, they have Sunday Night Football. They have a lot of other sports. They have NBA now, so they may not be as willing to body slam Nielsen's methodology as CW did.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations. The holiday season is fast approaching, but if you still have a few people left on your shopping list, don't worry. Uncommon Goods takes the hassle out of holiday gifting with thousands of unique, one-of-a-kind presents you won't find anywhere else. Many of these gifts are high-quality, handmade, or crafted by independent artists and small makers. One standout gift this season is the personalized Pet Family Blanket, an exclusive item created by artist Shelley Klein and available only at Uncommon Goods. Shelley creates custom portraits in her sweetly simple illustration style, where you can customize skin tones, hair, clothing colors, and pet details to make it truly personal. Measuring 50 by 60 inches, made from soft cotton and polyester, it's perfect for snuggling with your furry family. Plus, each purchase supports small makers and donates $1 to a nonprofit of your choice, including the International Rescue Committee and American Forests. So don't wait. Make this holiday the year you give something truly unforgettable. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/postwrestling. That's uncommongoods.com/postwrestling for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary.
This Black Friday, get 6 months free when you move your WordPress sites to Kinsta. Enjoy faster load times, no stress when traffic spikes, and hosting you can actually count on. We're G2's number one rated host for WordPress for a reason. Visit kinsta.com/BF. That's KINSTA.com/BF. Don't miss out. Offer ends December 2nd.
And what else did you learn kind of reporting out this story? You did reach out to several different people. I found Patrick Crakes to have like he is somebody that, for those not familiar, and he's been on our show in the past, like he was, you know, this was his world when he was working at Fox and specifically selling advertising for UFC, and I believe was still there at the time that WWE was joining Fox with SmackDown as well. So he not only understands this, but he also gets like the professional wrestling side of the limitations of selling pro wrestling as well and its value to these networks.
Yeah, and then we can go through what Patrick Crakes told me for this article too. I want to mention also though the Media Rating Council, which is this congressionally created, or Congress requested that this body be created back in the 60s, the Media Ratings Council. And I guess they don't just audit Nielsen, but they oversee other other organizations that do measurements. But anyway, they accredit, they're the ones who decide to accredit or not accredit Nielsen, which I guess is important if you're, you know, if, you know, Nielsen's measurements are so important throughout the advertising industry and other industries. They don't just measure TV ratings. They do lots of other things. But so the MRC CEO and executive director, just after this article published, the morning after, he did send me some comments. This is George W. Ivy. He said, our process is annual, and we conduct rigorous annual audits of the service to reaffirm the status, that is, the accreditation status of Big Data Plus Panel, which was already accredited. Marketing Brew had reported a few weeks prior that maybe the Big Data Plus Panel accreditation was in jeopardy or that they were considering taking it away. Anyway, he confirmed that they are still accredited, that specific methodology is still accredited. He sort of suggested that maybe including streaming data would help them, but as we know, only Dynamite and Collision are included in the streaming data, and that doesn't seem to be the issue to me, right? Let that it's not just a fact of the streaming data not being included that really explains this discrepancy. But he did say that they would take this discrepancy into consideration in the future. But Pat Crakes did say you know things to the effect of he doesn't think that this will be a drastically negative thing for wrestling media rights. We're dealing with, by the way, why does this matter? I mean, TV deals are by far the biggest financial issue for wrestling companies. I did the math, and combined, we're talking about on an annual basis between these four programs, not even include Raw on Netflix, $500 million annually, just domestically, between NXT, CW, Collision, Dynamite, and SmackDown. So, but he said, either the methodology is dinging wrestling because some viewers can't be seen in the big data homes, or the old panel was over-indexing in wrestling viewing, and this is evening it out. I did talk to him a bit about the theory that maybe it's related to duration, how long the viewer is watching. But he kind of downplayed that and said, well, it could just be from the way that that it's measuring people differently. We discussed the possibility of whether it's just wrestling fans being such a big wrestling fans and being more willing to adopt becoming a Nielsen panel. He said it's certainly disruption and uncomfortable, and you want to get it sorted out, because if you're running 20% lower next year, that's just a new world. The value overall for wrestling will remain strong, but there will be some impact because of this, primarily on the advertising side.
Perhaps they will have to enlist Rhino. Did you hear about Rhino when he was a young kid growing up in Detroit, of how he tried to help wrestling ratings rebound? He explained this in an interview that WWE put up, that he would go to his like local mall or something, and he flipped all the channels to the USA Network at his local mall, like some store, because he thought that would help the Nielsen ratings.
I don't know much about how these things are measured directly, but what they do now is, like, I think they give you a device that picks up a what is to us an inaudible signature that only this device can hear, that your human ear can't hear, and that's how they, I imagine that gets emitted like every minute or something, and that's how we have minute by minute ratings. So if there were no devices, I don't know if they were doing devices back then. That probably didn't help.
I don't think in the late 90s.
They weren't doing diaries and so forth.
Rhino had a portable people meter or anything to assist with that.
In the late 90s. This was like just before he was on ECW then.
It was something. He said growing up. So whenever that was for a young Terry Garen in Michigan. Anyway, I encourage everyone to go check out Brandon's report here, and looking at both the panel and the big data plus panel data to compare the two, and yeah, a blistering response from CW. And ultimately, if any action is even, like, what steps are even at the disposal of a CW? Like, it kind of just feels like this is the new methodology, and like there's no sign that there's going to be any adjustment unless Nielsen is going to investigate this itself or find an irregularity, which it hasn't displayed any idea of, like, that there is a problem with this necessarily.
And by the way, I sent, I believe it was 6 unanswered emails to media relations people at Nielsen. It seems like the theory that the long running duration being counted as passive viewing, when in fact it certainly wasn't being counted similarly in the old methodology, seems to be the issue here. My takeaway from talking to various people for this article is that there seems to be little understanding or awareness that that's a possibility, or how that could be affecting these ratings. Nielsen is obviously, at least for this article, is not explaining this to us and helping us understand. It's something that I think if I were any of these wrestling companies or networks, I would be banging the table about this, and we can see at least a great deal of frustration from CW.
I'd also be really curious if either WWE or AEW are having access to the just the panel data. Like, as we remember, when these numbers first came out, you remember that first week, and all of a sudden the panel data.
WWE definitely has access to the panel data.
Well, and for like AEW's sake, like the 1 hour collision getting that big bump, they also do have these tailgate brawls that are those 1 hour shows on a Saturday. Are they seeing a big difference there in if they are getting the numbers to compare as well? I mean, we do have that collision outlier that would be an argument in favor of the duration being a factor. Or is that just a one-off, for instance, that it was just, it followed a Dynamite and somehow it had this unusual spike? Because if that's a pattern, it certainly is evidence toward the duration being a factor.
And remember, it's not just about the viewership being high. It's that this viewership was, as I look at the wrong thing, it's that the viewership, of course, it was after Dynamite, so the viewership for Collision was higher than a typical Collision. It's that the discrepancy between old method and new method was not better for the old method. It was better for the new method, which in all other cases, well, Collision is more volatile here because it's a smaller viewership. But in most other cases, even for Collision, the new method was lower. And for the other episodes of these two-hour programs, the old method was higher. So, yeah.
Now we're going to move over to our favorite shareholder lawsuit that is ongoing, and we have had the transfer of documents. So again, coming from a WrestleNomics own Brandon Thurston, the plaintiffs in this case, led by an Ohio labor union pension fund, claim that the gathering of evidence so far, quote, confirms that WWE executive chair and controlling stockholder Vince McMahon faced material conflicts with respect to the merger, and that Endeavor's principals exploited those conflicts to induce McMahon to clandestinely pre-wire a deal while nominally running an open sale process, end quote. The claim is consistent with the plaintiff's overall theory that McMahon predetermined the sale process to assure that he stayed with the company afterward despite sexual misconduct allegations made against him. McMahon has denied the allegations. In a newly unsealed court filing, which contains many redactions, the plaintiffs argue that attorneys from Latham and Watkins, who represent the defendants, and non-party TKO execs Ari Emanuel and Mark Shapiro are dragging out the process by withholding documents and scheduling depositions at the last possible moment. The motion filed on Friday states that federal authorities seized McMahon's mobile device in mid-2023. The device was returned to him recently in October, and the plaintiffs say that McMahon cooperated to produce about 6,500 documents from that device on October 31st. The filing doesn't explain what those records consist of or whether 6,500 is largely a count of individual text messages. We'll stop it there because, first of all, just the fact that that's a nice return you get after 2 years. Okay, we've had our fun with your phone. Here you go, Vince McMahon. And 6,500, whatever it is off of his phone, I would guess that that would include every possible message that exists on that phone. And
think about your own phone. Would your own phone contain 6,000 text messages? Probably.
That's just my interactions with you on most days. I don't know what else. What is contained in these? And on the Vince McMahon front, you also reported he was scheduled to go under a deposition on Monday.
Monday was Vince McMahon deposition day for all those who celebrate. A couple Fridays ago, I believe the 21st, and it was last week Tuesday or something like that. Paul Levesque was deposed. Stephanie McMahon has already been deposed in this case. December is another holiday month, of course, where we have Nick Khan deposition day coming up, Mark Shapiro deposition day, and Ari Emanuel deposition day. And that is what this motion was really about. Is the plaintiffs, the shareholder plaintiffs, is saying we want to extend the window of fact-based discovery, which I believe means we want to extend the time in which we are allowed to request documents from the defendants. They want to extend it to January 28th. It's currently expired already on November 21st. They want to be able to request documents after they interview under oath Nick Khan, Mark Shapiro, and Ari Emanuel, which you can understand why they might learn things from those depositions that cause them to make additional records requests. So that's what they want.
These are all going to be sit-down releases for What's Your Story with Stephanie McMahon.
Unfortunately, depositions do not immediately become part of the public record. It's probably unlikely that an entire deposition transcript will become part of the public record, but excerpts might become part of the public record. We know there's issues around these plaintiffs wanting the signal messages between these parties that seem to have possibly been set to auto-delete. What else is happening here? We learned that Vince did get his phone back. The plaintiffs also want all the records that WWE provided to federal agencies, that is, the SEC and the DOJ. Reportedly, Vince McMahon was under a criminal investigation. No charges were filed. He was under a criminal investigation from the Southern District of New York, seemingly related to Janelle Grant's allegations of sexual misconduct. Of course, Vince McMahon denies all these allegations of sexual misconduct that have been made against him, and no charges have been filed. Reportedly, though, WWE provided a lot of documents to the SEC and to the DOJ related to investigations by both of those agencies. These plaintiffs want all the documents that you've given to those agencies. The SEC was involved because the payments should have been, the NDA payments of many millions of dollars should have been counted against W's financial statements. They had to go back and correct them. And to catch people up, and this is a common misunderstanding, like, well, Vince paid his personal money, and maybe he did. Vince paid his personal money to these women for NDAs. Why does that matter to WWE's business? Because we have the Janelle Grant NDA as part of that lawsuit. Vince McMahon is not the only one who gained a legal release. He's not the only one who gained a non-disclosure agreement. Vince also signed on behalf of the company. So it says, you know, Vince McMahon, and then he signed again for WWE. The company and Vince McMahon were gaining a release of liability, were gaining a confidentiality agreement with Janelle Grant in that lawsuit. In that NDA, and it may be the case for those other agreements as well.
It also states that WWE's 2023 disclosures outline three alternative offers that the company considered. All were cash proposals, one at $95 to $100 per share, another from $90 to $97.50 per share, and a third for $76.83 per share. The plaintiffs argue that each of these options would have removed McMahon from the company. They cite letters included in WWE's SEC filings that show McMahon pushing to return while the board unanimously rejected the idea, a standoff that ended in January when he used his controlling voting power to reinstate himself. McMahon would later resign for the second time in January 2024 after Janelle Grant filed a sex trafficking lawsuit, and that the plaintiffs contend that extending fact discovery to January 8th will let them resolve outstanding disputes and prepare for upcoming depositions without delaying the trial date, which is tentatively set from June 8th to 12th of 2026.
And I have looked at hotels near the courthouse, rest assured. Oh.
A Pollock and Thurston road trip.
Only a week trial, too, if it holds. It'd be only 3 out of those 4 days would they have one.
Delivering on the returns, increasing our margins.
That's right.
Could you imagine? We'd get a photo with him.
Yes, he would probably be a witness. No, it'd be you definitely not. So what this lawsuit, remember, is about the theory espoused by the plaintiffs that Vince didn't conduct a genuine sale process, that he predetermined that only his friend, Ari Emanuel, would allow him to stay with the company post-transaction. If one of these other parties bought the company, they would say, we're not going to have toxic Vince McMahon be a part of this company, given all the allegations against him. So we do know that these other proposals, I did look through the old 2023 documents, because they published a narrative, a canonical narrative, about how this deal came together. And they said there were 20 potential counterparties. There were 8 written indications of interest besides the Endeavor deal, which did come to fruition. There were 3 other proposals, which included Strategic Party 1, Strategic Party 2, and Financial Sponsor number 1. And they list in the SEC filing itself the price per share that was offered. I've taken the liberty of translating this into real dollars, given what the share price was at the time. Let's do the math here. And we're going to show on the screen here too what my beliefs are about beliefs. Not they do not disclose this themselves, but this is my belief about who these parties are. That I believe it's Liberty Media, the owner of Formula One, who offered the equivalent of about $7 billion for WWE based on the share price. Then we have Strategic Party 2, which I think is most likely Comcast offering $5.9 billion, kind of lowballing them, you could say. And I believe KKR, given the subpoenas that the plaintiffs handed out here, $7.2 billion. Now, it's hard to compare that to the deal that actually happened, because that's a deal that, of course, Endeavor took UFC out of itself and combined it with WWE as an all-stock deal. And as we've gone over a few times over the last 2 years or so, the weird thing about this deal and this narrative that they put out there is that the initial offer was Ari saying, "Oh, we'll let's combine the companies and we'll say that it won't cost us any cash. We'll take UFC out of ourselves, and in exchange, as part of this new company, Endeavor will own 57% of it. And all the W shareholders, including Vince, who's the biggest one of all the W shareholders will get 43% of this combined company. So basically we're saying UFC is worth 57 and WWE is worth 43. And then they came back and said, wait a minute, let's put a new offer on the table. And it's actually, instead of 57 for UFC, we're going to make it 51. And WWE, you can have 49%. You can have more. You can have, what is that? 6 percentage points more. With the caveat, this is Endeavor supposedly saying this, with the caveat that Vince McMahon, you must stay as executive chair. And Vince said, oh, you got me over a barrel. All right. And that's the deal that was made. And that's what's in WWE's own narrative in their filings about how this deal came together. And of course, the following morning after this deal was signed and announced, you have Ari Emanuel and Vince McMahon sitting on CNBC saying, Ari saying, oh my God, yes, we had to keep him. The plaintiffs have got to argue that that's wrong, at least, right? That that's false. That the value proposition here is that Vince, the justification from TKO is that Vince is so essential, so valuable to the company that we have to have him. And he's so worth, he's so valuable to the company that we're willing to add 6 percentage points onto your split just to get the guarantee that Vince stays for life or until he decides to leave. Of course, he did leave some 5 months later, or some, I guess it was April when this was announced. By January 2024, he's gone because the Grant lawsuit comes out and he resigns. Now, tell me what you remember. Did TKO about some disclosures right after Vince resigned and said, we have to readjust all of our financial outlooks now because Vince, this tremendously valuable man, is gone?
No.
No, none of that happened. And in fact, as Vince got removed from the creative process, W's attendances went up. The ratings, despite the headwind of cord cutting, went up.
If anything, this should be much more of a black mark on the instincts of an Ari Emanuel that you gave up 6% of equity in this deal for like the equivalent of like overspending for a pitcher who needed Tommy John surgery and would never pitch again. That was useless within a year. He was gone from the company, and not only gone from the company, but the company soared in his absence on top of it. And you're telling me that on the table, you could have had a 57% stake in this for Endeavor, and you gave up 6% for what? Like, this guy was a liability to begin with, and that only proved itself out over the next year, because from the announcement in April on CNBC that this guy has to be here, he's gone by January. He's completely gone. The company doesn't miss a beat, and you had forked over this percentage point, these percentage points, to retain this guy. Mm-hmm. I think this is much more of a like Ari Emanuel like focus that you would look at, of just the judgment in retaining Vince, who was already like, it's not even an idea of like, this is pre Wall Street Journal reporting that, hey, we were right, blindsided by this. You knew the liability that was on the table. This is a year after the Wall Street Journal has reported all of this, that you know that this guy is a tenuous figure at best, and you gave up equity to retain him. And I think Ari thought, this is their Dana White, and he's critical to the presentation of WWE. We can't do this without the secret sauce that Vince McMahon apparently has a patent on, and that was not the case.
Or if you're cynical, then you say that, well, this is just a false narrative that they put out to mitigate concern about litigation like this case that would you know, allegedly recognize that this was a predetermined process.
Do you feel that the plaintiffs at least have enough of a standing that a judge could look at this and state that, yes, you were, like, you look at the success TKO has had, and that, yes, an all cash deal would have proven like immediate rewards for shareholders, but was this really like a poor option by WWE to attach itself to this powerhouse, and that has seen this TKO stock surge, and that these two behemoths have joined together? Like, I think from a strategic standpoint, I think it's going to be really hard to prove that WWE like undercut themselves by opting to merge instead of just doing, like, I don't know what state the company is in if they go to KKR or Comcast or Liberty Media that have no experience running a pro wrestling company versus Endeavor that does have years under its belt of at least operating a similar business in UFC. And the results have proven themselves out thus far.
Yeah, I mean, this stock has performed really well. It does seem like Endeavor UFC was the best fit. And this company has performed really, really well financially.
We're not afraid to pound our chest about it.
That's just Mark Shapiro constantly reminds us. Now, I guess you could say, well, maybe they're not going to make this argument, right? They're not going to make this defense. But like, maybe it just so happened that Vince's interests of self-preservation and the financial interests of shareholders just happened to be aligned. So it was in the best interest for WWE to do this deal, even if it was predetermined. I'm not sure that would still be, I don't know.
Like, that would be my argument. If I was, and I'm not representing Vince McMahon, like, my argument would be, I am one and the same. I am the largest shareholder. I stood to gain as much as anyone by just doing an all-cash sale and instead of, like, a merger. Like, look what the end result was for Vince McMahon. He was in a, he was not as insulated as everyone thought he would be because he was ousted within a year once the Janelle Grant lawsuit hit. So, I think his argument is that I could have easily cashed out to a gigantic degree had I just sold to the highest bidder, but I was looking for the long-term value of this company and forming this strategic partnership, which did not have any protections for me, as obvious a year into this when he was gone.
What you don't have if you don't do a merger, if you just sell to Liberty. Well, maybe with Liberty, in the case of Liberty, what I'm getting to is the synergies. You don't get to lay off tons of people. You don't get that joy. And you just save a lot of money. Maybe what the shareholders would argue, even if this was a monetarily similar value or a better value, that you didn't let the other deals mature. You didn't let the process go far along enough so that those deals competed with each other or whatever the theory might be, so that it became an even better deal than this Endeavor deal could monetarily offer.
And that this was really not a process. This was a completed mission that, like, we have already chosen our hiring, but we're still going to go forward with these performative interviews with other candidates when we have our selection already made internally.
So what do they call it? A nominal... A pre-wire a deal while nominally running an open sale process.
Well, we do not have Stephanie McMahon's deposition, but we do have her sit-down interview with AJ Lee to talk about equal pay among female performers in WWE. So people might forget this, but over a decade ago, the Golden Globe Awards were taking place. I know everyone was watching Patricia Arquette's speech, and she spoke about the need for equal rights for women in the entertainment industry, and Stephanie McMahon, following along on her favorite platform of Twitter in February of 2015, quote tweeted this, applauding Patricia Arquette for speaking on such an important issue on such a big platform, and used the hashtag use your voice. And AJ Lee, who was just scrolling on that phone as a pending lawsuit was being filed against her husband, the ousted Phil Brooks, and whether or not this company had any financial backing of that lawsuit, that is speculation, and decided, she's deciding to advocate for equal pay among women in this industry, and yet here we are in WWE, and we're not quite experiencing that, are we? So she wrote that, quote, your female wrestlers have record-selling merchandise and have starred in the highest-rated segment of the show several times. And she would have a follow-up after that as well. But that was the main crux of things.
And yet they receive a fraction of the wages and screen time of the majority of the male roster.
Hashtag use your voice. So that was almost 11 years ago.
And that's all been fixed now, right?
Apparently so. Well, AJ's back in WWE. Stephanie McMahon wanted to have her on her podcast, and AJ said, "I'll come on, but I want to talk about the tweets from 2015." And so they sat down and they discussed Twitter and their exchange in 2015.
In general, I'm fairly direct. I try not to be rude. I think a lot of people are like, "Oh, I have no filter," and so it's an excuse for being rude. But, like, I think you can be direct, but very practical. And so I felt like it was coming from, like, a practical place, very direct. But I also was a bit, like, I ain't got nothing to lose right now.
But I was actually happy that you posted that. I wasn't happy that it was directed at me because it wasn't anything I had direct control over. But I was really happy that you did because... that movement, the whole women's evolution in WWE, it didn't happen because of executives or it didn't happen because, I mean, maybe along the way, you know, people voicing their opinions, but it really happened because of the women.
Yeah.
But then for our audience, when they started the hashtag Give Divas a Chance mm-hmm. at that time, that's what couldn't be ignored.
Yeah.
And the audience would never have gotten behind the movement if it weren't for people like you.
Thank you.
Who actually stood up for women publicly. And I mean, like, take on the machine a little bit.
Right.
You know?
So taking on the machine, which let's not overlook the fact that we literally now have it written into WWE talent contracts that you cannot disparage the company publicly, because maybe Ridge Holland, his big mistake was not including the hashtag use your voice a couple of weeks ago when he was fired for a tweet. So in this, I mean, they really don't go beyond this. Like, it's kind of like acknowledging it and then we just move on. Like, it's not like they got into any really substantive discussion about
they didn't go through everybody's annual compensation and examine whether women are being paid on a par basis to men.
They didn't discuss that. Like, it is very clear the women are paid much better than 10 years ago, but it would still be worth like comparing like what the top female performers are making in comparison to male performers and what significant advancements have been made over this time. I wish they had gone more into this. It almost felt as though it was, well, we don't want to ignore this topic, but we're going to address it in the most surface level of ways. And Stephanie just being like, I'm so proud that you tweeted that out. And that was it. It was
no direct control over the pay situation.
I mean, you're a top executive with the company. No, you are not the be-all, end-all when it comes to payment. But it's like, you're also not just any other employee either. I would say you are and you really did open yourself up with your own tweet that initiated that response.
So I guess what she's saying is, well, Vince would really have the control over that. Who oversees Vince?
She did not say that on the podcast.
No. But that's what
Vince doesn't exist on this podcast.
But at the time, Vince is the CEO. Who's overseeing Vince?
No one.
The board of directors. He's a member of the board. Well, anyway, and so is Vince, though. But yeah. Yeah, I think she has some influence over that. I think that's a reasonable person to raise that issue to. Yeah, I mean, there's just very little transparency that we have into this issue. We don't know what anyone's pay is. I can tell you with no confidence what anyone is getting paid in wrestling.
I think it's a topic that is certainly one that continues to permeate almost on a weekly basis, and it goes beyond just like, you know, it's not so much just a pay issue it comes to with female performers, but more so when we are looking at just, to me, I think like a really under focused story is the level of harassment that a lot of these women are undergoing. Like last week we had this issue where AJ Lee was doing a signing at a convention and a fan had done like created an AI photo of AJ kissing him. And this became a whole issue last week of wanting this taken down. And I can understand that from an AJ Lee point of view, but it's like, we are just scratching the surface. Like like that stuff is going to be permeating in such a way that we have, you know, like I always go back to that Bailey interview on FS1 and explaining just like how this industry works and these women that are like getting accosted at airports that are often they are the targets of stalking. It's like I'm sure men deal with a lot of this too, but I don't think it's anywhere in the proximity that women are as well. Becky Lynch just did this interview with Bert Kreischer, and she's talking about like this is in the last 10 years of first coming up to the main roster, and that there's a main event talent who would just target these women. And it's like, if you sleep with him, he blacklists you. And if you turn him down, he'll get you blacklisted, and stating the fact if there is a problem, they're going to protect the top male star and probably get rid of you, the female, if there's a problem, without naming whoever this performer was.
I did see this. It was not implied whether this person is still with the company or not.
No, they just said like a top star around the time when Becky got called up. So we're talking in the neighborhood of 10 years ago.
And I suppose she's not simply referring to Vince. It sounds like a wrestler that she's referring to.
She said a top star and one who would be protected. So, I mean, no, it would not sound like this was Vince. Yeah. but that this performer got Becky's number, and she was like, what do I do? It's essentially like you, whether you acquiesce or you turn down this person, either option is you're going to be screwed on this main roster. And it, like, you are going to get potentially blacklisted, as she put it in her terms.
Yeah.
But I just think there's this entire discussion point that I think you can still look at in terms of like what advancements have been made for women in this industry. And this goes beyond WWE, but also other areas that to me are still very concerning, and ones that you look at that when we hear all of these stories on such a frequent basis, you just feel like there is going to be some horrific story that is going to arise out of this, when fans are showing up at people's homes and like literally breaking into Sonya Deville's house, which was about as close as you're going to get to like the worst potential outcome.
Yeah, it does raise whether this company should be providing their talent with security in a lot of situations.
Well, the equal pay discussion, I wish it was more discussed than kind of just like a checking this off the box about like tweets. It was one where Stephanie was just
to add about travel, like her understanding of how they do plane travel is they're just going into terminals. It's not like this is a, it's not like there's a chartered, it's not like a sports team where there's like a chartered jet or something like that.
No, not for the like domestic touring. Like,
it's, and that's just where we get all the ridiculous airport stories from.
Yeah, and like this information, like flight information that's getting leaked out there for people to show up, and you know, it's just there's a high level here, and I'm not to say that, you know, the company can monitor and handle all of these things, but I think we are getting to a level where, you know, when it comes to talent that are still have to get to everywhere by themselves, like booking hotels and getting from town to town, like these are still things that feel very much as just a holdover from a totally different era of professional wrestling.
Yes. And it's largely a product of being misclassified as independent contractors.
Shockwave, AEW has withdrawn its trademark application. And what does this mean? Is Shockwave, has it officially, has the tide moved on from Shockwave?
So Shockwave was an application for a trademark that was made by AEW. They had not used the name, have never used the name. This is a trademark that they applied for back in September 2024, around the time, just a month prior, I believe, before they announced their new TV deal, when this trademark was applied for, because it was applied for the purpose of wrestling television programming. It was speculated that this was maybe it's going to be another AEW program, and it was in the ether that maybe AEW was talking to Fox. You had Swerve Strickland, the intrepid reporter, was overheard or caught on video saying that. So that never came to fruition, obviously. AEW does not have a program on Fox. But this trademark still existed. And well, after I think this was making the news, it seems that NWA, under its parent company, Lightning One, which belongs to Billy Corgan, got wind of that. They applied for their own trademark for NWA Shockwave, because back in December 2020, they had used the Shockwave name for their own wrestling events.
Who could have forgotten?
Who could forget NWA Shockwave? They had not used it since December 2020, but they made sure in January 2025 to run some more events called Shockwave, just to show that we're using this and we're still going to use it. And then they formally had some USPTO litigation about this. AEW did push back and filed their own answer, denying NWA's various allegations about this trademark and so forth. This is all pretty dormant, and this was all pretty latent, I would say, until AEW rolled out their AEW national title, seeming in their announcement to claim the lineage of the NWA national title, which does exist, is defended and held by one Mike Mondo. Much unhappiness was raised on social media after AEW announced its national title. One NWA wrestler claimed that this was retaliation for the trademark litigation.
Oh, boy.
And then we did have Tony Khan talk about this briefly in not a lot of detail with Ari Emanuel, saying that he did have a discussion with
Ariel Helwani.
Who did I say?
Ari Emanuel. I don't think he talked about this with Ari Emanuel.
Sorry, I'm getting my Ariels mixed up. He did have a discussion with Ariel Helwani about this on the MMA Hour on November 18th. And as it turned out, the prior day, I had not checked. See, this is a bad job by me. I had not been checking and refreshing the USPTO dispute screen. And it turned out on the prior day, the USPTO, the Trademark Trial and Appeal Board entered a judgment because 4 days before that, AW filed something that says we voluntarily abandon this trademark. And so anyway, Tony Khan said that he had had a discussion with Billy Corgan and basically said, if you want to use it, yeah, you can use it. So that issue is no more. They said they did talk about the national title issue. He didn't get into detail about that. The national title, to be clear, is not a trademark. I don't think you could trademark it. So it's dismissed with prejudice. AEW cannot apply for the AEW Shockwave trademark again.
Unfortunate. I'm glad to hear that him and Billy Corgan agreed to disarm.
Yeah, it's unclear if there was a settlement. I wouldn't rule it out. Maybe there could have been. But we don't know. I did ask both sides. Did not get a response.
We have on the note of Tony Khan, of course, Full Gear went down this past Saturday at the Prudential Center in Newark, New Jersey. WrestleTech's reporting over 10,000 tickets distributed for the event. And afterwards, Tony Khan held his regular press conference, and he was asked about comparisons to a year ago, where the company was, while also addressing the length of its pay-per-views, including what is actually stipulated about the length that they have to achieve for each show.
1 year ago, I felt, and today it's 180 degrees the other way, felt 1 year ago embattled. I feel the opposite. I feel like we are, like, doing the 10,000 fans and having the Full Gear show felt like the beginning of a turnaround, and that's really what everybody, the vibe of the Full Gear last year was like, this feels like the beginning of a big turnaround for us. In each of the first three quarters year over year, we gained share on CBS for Dynamite, which is huge. For TNT right now on Collision, this is the time of year now where after some playoffs and stuff, the show's back in its groove. And this is the most exciting time of the year, I think, because now the Continental Classic gets going and we're down into the final stretch. And then recently we started doing the pay-per-views on HBO Max, and I think this is going to be the biggest one yet, and I'm really excited about it. I won't have all the data till early next week, but just from early advanced buys, it felt like this was a real great success story. We had great international support for the show.
Great. And he mentioned when it came to the length of the pay-per-views, he explained that their minimum they have to meet is 3 hours and 45 minutes. And there has never been an AEW pay-per-view less than 3 hours and 45 minutes. So he seems at least open to the idea of doing the afternoon shows after the three successive ones they did earlier this year. And as well, trying to have a cutoff of midnight Eastern when it comes to Sunday night shows, but less concern about a early end time for the Saturday night shows, comparing it to MMA or boxing cards that can often go much later.
So get your coffee ready, and you might have to just start drinking in the afternoon sometimes. But you better have your caffeine ready. He felt embattled last year, he said.
Could they get a trademark on that term? AEW embattled.
I think that's good. We'll have to look into that. It would have to be a 1B application, though. That's why he said, I remember him saying, do you, on various conference calls and press conferences, that he felt embattled last year.
He has not mentioned before embattled that he felt.
No, he always said he felt great and everything was great.
He's not a show your emotions type of guy in the moment, but retroactively. And he made it very, very, very clear he does not feel this way now.
Okay.
He prefaced that. So embattled a year ago and today completely different.
Why do you think he felt embattled? Because he had.
Well, I mean, I think last year, it's a good point, because if we're going back a year, the TV deal would have just been signed But it was also at like a point where I think a like
you're a year removed from the CM Punk drama at that point. Halfway, you know.
It was definitely from a fan sentiment standpoint. It felt like the last quarter of 2024 was one of the lower points for AEW. I think the Death Rider fatigue had really set in on a lot of people. We're talking about, you know, Danielson has just retired. But you're right. Like that is the cushion of all of that is kind of the afterglow of this TV deal, which is the biggest deal in the company's history at this point. Would you state that AEW has feels like any stronger this year than a year ago?
It's, I know we had the one episode where we discussed their attendance plateauing or maybe moving in the right direction. I mean, it hasn't rebounded or anything. I would have to look to see, you know, what Dynamites are doing, but I mean, they're doing a lot of residencies. I mean, they're business wise, they're performing okay. Their TV ratings are hard to analyze. Mm-hmm. The atmosphere around the company does seem more positive. I would say that.
We also have a Survivor Series coming up this weekend. It will be the biggest Survivor Series in history. I think we can at least call it, at least from an attendance standpoint, because this is the first outdoor Survivor Series at Petco Park in San Diego, where WrestleTix current number lists the show 34,540 tickets distributed. And we still have several days until the show. So we will see what the number ends up being. We got shots of the construction of the war game setup, which is underway in San Diego. And we will get our double war games event. And this will be the third event under the ESPN banner, which, Brandon, your understanding as a YouTube TV subscriber, do you believe you will have access to the show this weekend?
I do not anticipate that YouTube TV subscribers will be able to watch Survivor Series at no added cost, at least not without traveling overseas. No, I would expect that to be available to YouTube TV subscribers next year. So we don't. I think Comcast is still an outlier. Eventually, I suppose Disney. I don't know what the contract length is when that needs to be renegotiated, but Comcast is the other big pay TV carrier that obviously carries ESPN, but doesn't yet have its customers having no added cost access to the YouTube TV app, which is where, or I'm sorry, the ESPN app, which is where these PLEs are broadcasting. So if you want to watch these shows, and you don't have access to it on your pay TV system, you need to pay $30, which sounds like a pay-per-view to me.
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, Rewind Away looks at some of the biggest retirement matches in wrestling history, featuring matches involving Terry Funk, Ric Flair, Sting, and Tam Nakano. Plus, John Pollock and Brandon from New Jersey get together to look back at season 4 of 90210, a season that brought you John Sears, Lucinda Nicholson, David's meth addiction, and Brandon moving in on Kelly Taylor. Book Club will cover This Book Is All Elite by Keith Elliott Greenberg. Plus, we have reviews of TNA Turning Point, UFC 322, and so much more. $6 gets you all this at postwrestlingcafe.com. Well, it is the third event on ESPN since WrestlePalooza, and also the first domestic show since WrestlePalooza, because the last show was the Crown Jewel show in Australia. So Burke Magnus was on with Jimmy Traina and was asked about the early period of this deal between ESPN and the WWE and working with the company.
Fantastic to work with. They really hustle on behalf of their property. You know, those appearances don't just happen unless you have a league that's willing to make all those people available, and that the superstars are highly engaged in promoting both themselves, but also the broader WWE and their stories. So it's been really good so far. We're looking forward to WrestleMania this year, which would be our first. But, you know, we've had two PLEs to date. One of them was in the Middle East, so it was on an off hour. WrestlePalooza was new. Survivor Series this weekend actually will be a really good measuring stick for how it's going. But in terms of the interaction between the team at WWE and us, it's been great.
So Burke Magnus didn't have a whole lot to disclose there, so it's forcing me to really parse those words. We had one event. He said the Middle East. It was Australia, which was an off-hour event. That tells me probably didn't do spectacular. Then there was WrestlePalooza, and that was the first one. So this week's one is going to give us a really good barometer of how things are going. Not exactly lighting the world on fire with his assessment, at least two events in, but they're great to deal with. These are great people to deal with. Am I too overanalyzing the words of Burke Magnus?
I think combine that with the comments that we evaluated the other week about from Nikon and Mark Shapiro about this relationship, where they said things to the effect of, you know, it's early days. They didn't say that, but, you know, they said things to that effect, and that they, you know,
it's a new product that we're hoping that this is not its final form. It's still maturing. I mean,
yeah,
like there's going to be a time when Tony Khan a year from now is asked about, man, how has this ESPN relationship grown in the past year? Man, those early days were rough, is what this feels like. It does not seem like this has been, it doesn't feel like this ESPN app, is a real great comparable to a more like Peacock that just has that many more years of development, that they have not seen this gigantic game changer of a product that's come over and led to this like signups for the ESPN app that maybe were hoped for.
Maybe a year from now, they'll say they felt embattled about that.
Embattled might be the term that best describes the early days here. Bushiroad has not been embattled when it comes to Wrestle Kingdom. They have sold out their allotment of tickets, and they did have their filings that Brandon got a hold of, and does confirm the number of tickets that are sold for Wrestle Kingdom 20 on January 4th.
They put out a set of slides this morning in the early hours. We have an email system that keeps us up to date about everything that could potentially be newsworthy in our world, and we got an email somewhere in the wee hours of the morning in the Western Hemisphere where it says here, as everyone can read here in Japanese, I have translated this through multiple translators, and it does say that they have sold 40,000 tickets for Wrestle Kingdom, which I think is not been clearly set up to this point.
No, they have. When they stated that they were sold out, they just said the current allotment of tickets. They didn't attach a number, but when they did legitimately sell out the Tokyo Dome in 2020, like the paid figure was 40,000, and that was the assumed number. But this is kind of confirmation of that many tickets sold. So, the question becomes how much more room they can make available in the Tokyo Dome, because their plan is to create areas in the outfield and expand their current setup to see what they can max out here, because obviously the demand is very, very high for Evil defending the never openweight championship against Aaron Wolf.
I love the auto translation here that they're getting emergency seating.
Emergency seating. This is a gigantic priority for Bushiroad to rescale the Tokyo Dome. Final things we'll talk about here. Last week's Raw, which was John Cena's final Raw, ended up with the show doing 3.1 million views and 5.8 million hours viewed for this show listed at an hour and 48 minutes, ranking sixth globally and ranking in the top 10 in 19 different countries, including a third place finish in the U.S. behind The Beast and Me, Absentia, and beating out the first season of Stranger Things.
I'll
take that.
I have to go.
Probably a very far amount to get to 3.1 million.
To find something that's 3.1. We have a 3 million even number here. This is probably post SummerSlam in August.
Yes.
And then we have, where are we at? We have another 3 million probably 2 weeks after WrestleMania. And then we have to go back to post WrestleMania to find 3.6 million. That would be higher than this number. So the highest, John Cena drawing. Was it John Cena or was it something else on the show?
It was John Cena.
John Cena drawing a big number for Netflix.
How much is a miniature John Cena going to mean to Netflix's viewership from this past Monday?
I can't comment on that. I can't comment on miniatures. No.
Then we had the SmackDown numbers, which came out just before we started the show. And SmackDown ended up doing 1,210,000 viewers, which was their largest audience since September the 26th, which was the first week of Big Data Plus panel, and also generating a 0.29 in the 18 to 49 demo, their largest since October the 24th.
I'm going to show a graphic that will be exclusive to this program that I never show. Do you see these in your email? Because you get these sent, where it shows for people listening in audio. We've got a purple block here that shows the relative size of SmackDown's audience versus all other things in prime time on that night.
So
SmackDown was number two on cable. Do you ever see these? Do these come through? Is my script working? Is what I'm trying to ask you right here on the air.
I don't get these. No.
You don't see these?
They do not get emailed to me. No.
This is the first time you've ever seen something like this.
It's the first time I've laid eyes on this. It looks like a wonderful graphic. It translates very easily to me. I can see that Florida State and North Carolina State was a big hit on Friday night on ESPN.
Yeah. Celebrity Wheel of Fortune, though.
Celebrity Wheel of Fortune.
Yeah.
What constitutes celebrity on that show? Like, who is occupying Wheel of Fortune at those hours that are celebrities? Like, are these like Bert Kreischer level celebrities, or are these real celebrities?
I've not done my research on that.
It's like the front row of Raw with every comedian.
Okay. Sheriff Country number 4, which we hear constantly on CBS NFL broadcasts. So my script needs some troubleshooting, is what I've learned here.
Okay. Well, as soon as I get these emails, you'll be the first to know.
Okay.
But just disclosing, I get all your press releases that I,
because it's hard to get what I'm having trouble with is making images get sent in an email. I guess is my issue there. Yeah.
Well, you're currently embattled with
when I'm referencing a URL, but attaching an image that I make on the computer itself, which that's a matplotlib image that you're looking at there.
I was going to say, yeah. Thanks for explaining it first. Well, everybody, there you go. You're all up to date now. I think we got some super chats here, so let's quickly.
These are not super
this.
Chats, but these are just things that I enjoyed. I did want to answer this question: what happens if the plaintiffs win in the shareholder lawsuit? They probably get money. Shareholder lawsuits often end in settlements; they do not go to trial. But a class of shareholders, if you owned WWE stock between this date and this date, probably overlapping this negotiation, you get some money per share that you owned. I think a trial would have a similar outcome.
How low of a percentage chance are we looking at a trial in June?
I don't know. I think, given how far into discovery we are, I'm just not experienced enough to give you a reliable answer on this. But given that we are pretty far into discovery, it's much more likely that it's going to go to trial now than it would if it, you know, than I could say when we were earlier in this process.
Yeah. I mean, TKO is going to have their own strategy, and me from like a million miles away, I think this is a very, very winnable case for TKO that
may be a factor in why this is playing out so long.
But do you want to go through that whole process?
Yeah. Would be a bench trial, by the way, so not a jury trial. That the judge in this case, who is J. Travis Laster, vice chancellor, he would be the one to make it to determine any verdict.
Well, circle your calendars for June. Okay, that's the dates to watch. This is from what AJ Lee had said on the podcast. I have no filter is an excuse for being rude. Feels like a shot at her own husband. There was no slander issued towards Phil.
Yes.
And you got from my favorite too. Spreadsheet pervert. Is that what your friends call you, Brandon?
It's the only context in which I will accept being called a pervert.
All right. Well, everyone, that brings us to an end. with John Pollock and the spreadsheet pervert himself, Brandon Thurston, who has just graphed everyone to death on this this week's edition of the show. You can catch all of his work over WrestleNomics.com, where a lot of his latest reporting lives, and support the man. Patreon.com/WrestleNomics, where you are getting graphs, emails, ratings. Let him know if these emails are coming through for you. He appreciates the one-on-one feedback. And over at postwrestling.com, you can find me tonight after a two-hour edition of Dynamite with Waiting, as I am I'm slowly talking myself into my demise, as I just do a lot of talking every single week.
You should promote the 3 hour. I opened this podcast that downloaded into my podcast app the other day, a 3 hour and 15 minute history of the Survivor Series. I thought I was between the sheets. I was downloading for a second.
Let's not get crazy. I couldn't go that length, but yes, there is a for Post Wrestling Cafe members, an entire history of the Survivor Series by yours truly, going from 1987. When the WWE decided, let's use this thing to kill Jim Crockett. And we all know one current promoter that has a lot more money than Jim Crockett. Yeah. And all the way up until last year's show in Vancouver, year by year, a breakdown, heavily reliant on past recording pay-per-view buys as recorded at WrestleNomics.com that everyone can get the data on.
And a full breakdown of whether Montreal was work.
I think that's about 2 hours and 55 minutes dedicated to the screw job, okay. And the rest to all the other years itself. All right, everybody, we're going to say goodbye. Back tonight after Dynamite, and we will speak with you next week, Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Goodbye.
This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. Postwrestlingcafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.